Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this meeting of the Marian Council. It's 7 o'clock, I open the meeting. We acknowledge the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. I let everyone know that the audio of this General Council meeting will be recorded and made available on the City of Marian website, as long as the technology works. I ask elected members if there's any declaration of interest they wish to bring to the Chair's attention. Mr. Councillor Appleby?
The telecommunications tower item, due to my position on the DAP.
Right, so DAP members may leave the chamber when it comes to that item, which will be soon. And same for Councillor Westwood. Thank you. I'm asking for a motion confirming the minutes of the General Council meeting held on the 22nd of September. It's moved to Councillor Telfer, seconded to Councillor Pryor. All those in favour? All those against? That's carried unanimously. There are no adjourned items or youth advisory committee update. And so we come to deputations. There are three resident deputations, and I note from the agenda, in terms of the what I'm calling the phone tower issue, that there's also someone I might call an expert. So I think that it would be appropriate to sort of set the scene for Mr. Keith Baldry to address us first. It will be properly sort of framed with the other deputations from residents then. He's an operation, so I'd ask him to come forward, please, to address the council meeting. He's the operations director, mining, radiation and regulatory support with the Environment Protection Authority. So if you could address us for up to 5 minutes, Mr. Baldry, that would be appreciated. Someone will help you work the microphone. And if you can, please try and finish under 5 minutes, and that will allow time for questions from members. Over to you.
Okay, thanks for the opportunity to make a short presentation here. As I say, I'm Director of Mining Radiation Regulatory Support with the Environment Protection Authority. The EPA has an advisory role in relation to non-ionising radiation and issues such as this. So I'm very happy to be here to provide advice and answer any questions that people have. Mobile phone base stations emit radio frequency radiation that's part of the electromagnetic spectrum that includes TV and radio signals, amongst other things. The advice that the EPA provides in regards to the safety of such radiation is based on publications from the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency, that's the Commonwealth Regulatory and Advisory Body, and also from international organisations such as the World Health Organization. This advice is that the levels of electromagnetic radiation from base stations are low, and there is no evidence of any health effects from that electromagnetic radiation. There's a national standard that's published by the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency, and levels from base stations such as that proposed for either Keller Reserve or Morphett Road, as I understand, they would be likely to be less than 1% of the levels set in the standard, and that's typical for base stations that are already constructed and operational around Australia. The levels from base stations are much less than the radiation levels from using the mobile phone itself. And the EPA advice is that it's safe for children, and We're happy to discuss any concerns that people have on this issue.
Look, a couple of things. I just wanted to know sort of what difference in intensity tower versus a mobile, also how it compares to Wi-Fi, and also with the towers which are there to increase the capacity. So as you've got 4G and things like that where people download more, how does that impact on the level of radiation as well of the radio waves?
In terms of the difference between a mobile phone and a base station, mobile phone actually has, because it's right next to your head, has enough energy to have a small change in temperature of the skin. So there's an actual small physical effect that's not expected to have any health effect either, but the levels from a base station are very much less than that and don't have any observed physical effect or health effect in terms of on the human body. Wi-Fi is similar. It's the levels are very low and there's no known health effects, and so we've got no concerns about radiation from Wi-Fi either.
Comparable, is it more for Wi-Fi or less for Wi-Fi than your average would be from a base station?
I actually don't know the difference between Wi-Fi in your home and a base station. I do know that the highest levels of electromagnetic radiation in your house will be from household appliances. That would include your, you know, bedside clock radio. You've got radiation from the switchboard on the outside of your house, and you know your kettle and your toaster. Anything that's electrical in your house is producing electromagnetic radiation, and the levels from a base station would be very much smaller than those levels. You asked about the increased usage, and it's one of the reasons that the telcos are wanting more stations around metropolitan areas as usage goes up. When I said that the levels are likely to be less than 1%, when they do the modelling, that's the maximum emissions from that, assuming that it's used to the maximum possible extent. And so the levels in practice are likely to be much less than that, as people don't use it to capacity. If you've got, for mobile phones, if you've got less availability of base stations, your phone's trying harder to communicate with the base station, so it's actually going to emit more radiation and right next to your head than if you had more base stations.
So. Asking was, if I'm on my phone talking to someone, there's a certain amount coming through the tower, but if I'm downloading a high-definition video to watch later on, then, and everyone else is doing it, there's more coming from the tower. So is that an impact at all?
I personally don't know whether downloading data increases the power requirements from the base station more than a voice call does. What I can say is that the modelled maximum emissions from the base station assumes maximum usage, so whether that's from the data or from the voice, it's going to be less than the limit set out in the standard.
Any other questions?
Mr. Baldry, thanks for your address. I was interested to know on whether EPA would have data to in regard to installations that would emit more radiation, such as electricity substations, etc., and whether you're in the knowledge of any health measured and recorded health issues as a result of those. And secondly, are you ever involved in the active promotion of the safety of Telstra's towers of this nature and size, apropos of allaying people's fears and of real estate devaluation. So in other words, to actually promote, perhaps Telstra does it, but I think coming from the EPA, which is arm's length, I'd be interested to know if EPA have been involved in that sort of passage of information.
Okay. On the question as to whether there are actual health effect, actual regulation of the more significant emitters, such as substations, and also radar is a significant emitter of electromagnetic radiation. Yes, you can have levels that, in some circumstances, exceed the limits for the members of the public. The EPA does not have a regulatory role there. That falls to either Safe Work SA or the Australian Media and Communications Authority, whatever the regulator for that is, in terms of the higher levels associated with those facilities. It tends to be only workers who are maintaining the equipment who can be exposed to those sort of levels. There would be restrictions of public access to actually get that close to the significant emitters. So we don't have a regulatory role, but we have an advisory role in terms of, you know, advising government, local government and the community in the exposures they're likely to encounter. In relation to the question of promotion and allaying fears and property values, we have information on the EPA website in terms of our advice regarding the health effects, but we don't have any active role in that. We would, if somebody wanted more detailed information, we would tend to refer them to ARPANSA, the Commonwealth agency. They have more specialist expertise in this area. So whilst we provide advice and make ourselves available, we don't have any active role and would only meet Telstra representatives at occasions like today. It is, the signals are directional. They're intended to broadcast over a wide area as possible. And so directly beneath the tower, the levels are less than further away from the tower. There is a good website, actually, that where all of the telcos are required to publish information about the emissions from both their operational towers and their proposed towers. That actually gives you the levels of radiation in relation to the standard at various distances, 50 metres, 100 metres, 150 metres from the tower. I think on average the levels are at the highest 100 or 200 metres distant from the tower at ground level, but that information is available for anybody to look at. It's mobilesitesafety.com.au. We don't undertake such work and don't really have the capability, but our ARPANSA has done national surveys of at selected locations, including in Adelaide, and has published that on the ARPANSA website. So we are reasonably confident that the modelled emissions are a good indication of what the radiation levels are based on the verification work that's been done by organisations like ARPANSA, and I've got no concerns that levels are, there's any like hot spots that are unknown to us. But as I say, we don't do that work ourselves. That was a one-off survey that IPANSA did, so it's not a regular thing. It would be the equipment required to detect the levels of emissions from base stations is, we don't have that equipment, but there are people that have that, and I would imagine that the telcos certainly are able to provide that information if you requested that.
So if there was a faulty piece of equipment or somebody willfully cranked up the power of the site, there'd be no way of actually detecting that in Adelaide right now.
There's no real time. I don't think it's possible given like a single piece of equipment. What might be possible is if you had telcos who continue to put equipment at one location such that cumulatively they started adding up to a level which exceeded the normal levels, but they're so far below the standard, even with several providers on a back station, that it would take a lot of equipment to do that. And the standards are set very conservatively anyway.
You indicated before the radiation from a handset is greater than the received dose from the tower. That I'm assuming that would be when you're making a call.
Yeah.
The handset still communicates with the tower whenever it feels like it. So is there a baseline level for the handsets? Let's say we've got 15 handsets in this room. Is there a baseline comparing that sort of idle performance of a phone with a tower?
I don't know what the numbers are. I'm pretty sure that the idle performance is pretty low level and that it's only when it's actually transmitting on an ongoing basis through a call or data transmission that you'd have significant levels.
The fair bit of updating, like people have set their apps to update, that's why your battery goes flat within a day. So would that increase the intensity? Because obviously things update, people have updates on the phone, they remind you that Google or Apple, would that increase the intensity as far as the baseline goes?
I would think that if it's draining your battery, then yes, it's using power, and yes, it is. If it's doing that, then it's certainly doing communications, which is emitting radiation, which at levels significantly higher than the base station. Usually in those situations, you're not holding it next to your head, so the actual exposure of the individual to that radiation is probably quite a bit less than during a call. Okay, thanks for the opportunity. As I say, we're always available to answer people's questions so far as we can.
Thank you very much. Well, now we'll go straight and we'll get to take.
Thank you. So please, if you're here and you don't want the mobile phone tower at Kellett Reserve, can you hold up your sign just to show the councillors? Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so thank you for allowing me to address you this evening. My name's Shelley Roach and I live opposite Kellett Reserve and am part of the club. The survey that you did showed that if the tower was located near your home, you chose the alternate location, which is not correctly depicted by the east versus west division. The mobile phone tower is to be located at the red cross on the map. It will be surrounded predominantly by commercial property, which is highlighted in blue. This is not a nice area to be in with traffic noise and is not used by the community. The trailer hire business has had trees on the entire length of the northern boundary, which is about the same as the same length as Kellett Reserve. It will be next to a busy road lined with high voltage and normal power lines. It's opposite a bus stop, two residential and commercial properties. They're already impacted by the surrounding infrastructure and have established vegetation and fencing to reduce the impact, which will also reduce the impact of the phone tower. The house next door was sold after the process began with the DAP and the appeal lodged. The property at the rear of the trailer park appears to have very limited open space in their yard, so the tower would have minimal visual impact. Kellett Reserve is surrounded by residential property, with a majority looking directly onto the oval and the phone tower. The oval boundaries run extremely close to the fence line, as shown in orange. This limits room for development, and there is no room for additional housing stations if another phone provider is to use the tower. As the tower will be located 2 metres from the edge of the oval, trees cannot be planted to minimise the impact, as they would need to be put on the playing field. Many residents have paid a premium to enjoy the open space views. The survey showed residents who lived in the area for less than 2 years were less likely to select the oval as a suitable site. This is because they value the recreational area provided by council and most likely have reduced backyards due to property regeneration. They chose to live here because of the facilities. The views of the tower cannot be obscured to anyone living east, then north or partly south of the tower. By adding a light to the tower, residents will also have to view it at night. This is a council sign at Kellett Reserve within metres of the proposed phone tower. This is not about residents, but people from our community who use the facility. Their thoughts have not been captured by the survey, as many are not immediate residents driving or walking to the oval as the park, and the park as it's unique. Users include personal trainers, running groups, Tai Chi groups, dog walkers, people coming to the park for relaxation, family time, reflection and play, coffee drinkers also with the new cafe opening. This is a beautiful area developed by the council that has become a destination for our entire community. They come here for the playground, barbecue, seating area that's lit at night, oval, cricket nets, football posts, and you can bring the dog. The trees are rich in bird life and you can hear them all singing, another reason the area is so relaxing and people want to spend time here. I don't know if the tower will make the birds move on, but I've never seen one around the towers in the city. Residents have built homes to take advantage of the community land and open space, which has not been done at Morfitt Road. I will see the tower from all living areas in my house. Included here are pictures from the alfresco area and the view from my bed, which definitely impacts on my amenity. I have nowhere to escape it and relax day or night. The trees will not reduce the visual impact from balconies. Glass doors were installed to take advantage of the views. Now it will be a phone tower. The property is only metres from this property. So issues to consider. This sets a precedent for Telstra to erect mobile phone towers in other residential areas on community land. I've been advised Marion Council can be found liable for the loss of property values. Conservatively, the damages could amount to $1.2 million. This is not a consideration at 142 Morfitt Road. Marion Council have approved $70 million worth of community development with no phone towers. To offer a club in extreme financial hardship the possibility of $18,000 per year if a phone tower is placed on the boundary is viewed by the community as a payoff by Telstra and Council. This has created hostility between the club and the community when they need community support to survive. A question that should have been asked on the club survey, if the club was in a good financial position, would you still agree to the phone tower on the boundary? 100% of people I asked said no. Council funding a mobile phone tower income should be mutually exclusive. Our community expects Council to preserve our open land spaces. Simply, the club want financial support, but they would prefer not to have the phone tower. This has divided the club, with 26% of members against the tower, and it was only emailed to 160 members, not 600 as stated. I'll just quickly say, we'll skip all those other bits. Pretty much, I just want to say this is a decision that if you're leaving to the football club, they don't have the capacity to make it. They don't have the business acumen to actually make this decision. And if they're the final nah, in this, I want counsellors to make the decision. And hopefully you decide that it's too much for those people on a committee who don't have business sense to make. I know it's a difficult decision, and wherever this tower goes, residents will be impacted. But I just think here, the community will be impacted much more. There you go. That's it. Thank you very much for letting me go over.
Thank you for a very short number of questions. I know that I do have one, so I'll take the opportunity.
From the Chair, you mentioned risk of litigation. I have to say that does go in the face of everything I've seen come out of the court in relation to the erection of phone towers. So I don't know if you can provide any further references or anything in relation to that on the spot?
Yeah, it was a very simple conversation, and it was a holistic conversation of this is the situation.
Uh-huh.
The council are looking to swap community land to commercial. What will be the impact for council? And
right.
The comments I had back was because of that, they may be liable for some compensation.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
Yep.
Other questions, members? Yeah, Councillor Vlescu?
Yes. We're in this position because there's a likelihood of the tower going somewhere. I'm going to ask the same question to all residents presenting.
Yep.
Which, if you were to live in next to one of them, which one would you think would be the least impact?
Which one do I think is the least impact?
Would you prefer
to live there? I actually think if you've already chosen to live on Moorfoot Road in that commercial area, you've already accepted a reduced amenity of your property. Whereas if you've built properties to take in the views, we don't have fences around the oval, if you haven't noticed. There's fences everywhere on Moorfoot Road because you don't want to see it. We want to see it. We want to enjoy that open space. So to me, it makes sense to put it in the commercial area, to put it near the pub, to put it near the shops. And the houses that are there already have the infrastructure set to avoid looking at tower.
Yes, I'm just wondering, thanks very much for your presentation. It was very informative too, I must say. I was interested to know whether residents have considered just how much of an absence of trees there is. I went for a particular drive around the property. Yes? Yep. But I'm really talking about issue of visibility of the tower. You don't feel in any way that it could be mitigated by plantings?
But, well, the only way you can do it, because the tower is going to be 2 metres from the boundary of the oval, the football oval, the only way you can do it is to make the oval smaller when it's already the smallest in the league, because you'd have to plant trees in front of it. So if we looked at that map, there's one corner that has some trees, the rest of it doesn't. So every other house will look directly onto the tower. And we've built a house to enjoy the space, and now there'll be a tower there to look at. So the trees don't mitigate it, for me, because you would need to put trees all about it. Like at the army barracks, that is hidden by vegetation, absolutely. And that's good. But unless you get rid of the oval, you can't do it at Kellett Reserve.
In amongst the trees.
The end of breeding it. Yep. Yes.
We were looking for a... for me, it's all about...
Not about common fire at the moment, just about... Yeah. Yeah.
Some figures. Obviously, as far as the survey, have you checked those with the club as far as who did and didn't get the petition?
The email was sent not on a blank email, it was an open email, so you could see everyone that it went to. I actually checked with Gary Ball, and he told me it was 160 people that got it. I checked with the people at the club and said, how many members would you have that have got this? And they would have said 140, 150. So that's coming directly from the club, not from the president, but they also uploaded it to Facebook as well. As my husband's a life member of cricket club, football club, I've played netball there, my kids play football there and cricket, we didn't receive the email. So I don't know what happened with the football club, whether, I don't want to say they did anything untoward, deliberately not sending it to people who would say no. But that's all I can tell you. That's what I know happened.
Just ask, because I, as soon as I got that, I did make some inquiry.
Yep.
I've been advised that there were other people that were sent that. So
they've sent it on a separate email to the email that they sent to everyone else?
I've been advised that there were two groups that were sent that. That's the advice that was given, because obviously...
Thank you for this opportunity to voice our concerns. My daughter, my husband and myself are the residents and owners of the property at No. 1 Stanley Street, Glengowrie. Our home is next to the site of the proposed telecommunication towers at 142 Morford Road and is only separated by a fence. We are asking the Marion Council to ensure the tower does not get built at Morford Road, as it would sit right at our fence. No amount of screening would hide this 31-metre huge and ugly tower from our backyard, as there are no trees of any description on the proposed site, and minimising its visual impact would be impossible. We built this family home over 42 years ago in 1973, so we have been in the Marion Council area and ratepayers for a very long time. This will also be my daughter's home for many years to come. And the 150 people in our area who signed our petition agree this is not the right site. Just in closing, this has been a very stressful time for our family, considering we have a unanimous no to the application at the first council meeting, so therefore we respectfully ask that you consider better alternatives. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, can I just ask for a response? Apparently your area has really quite poor views. Do you think it's fair that because you've got poor views, we should be looking at imposing it on you because your views aren't very good already? You've got very poor views in that area already, so if you had a phone tower, it wouldn't be as big an impact as we've heard from the last speaker. Is that correct?
It's a huge impact. This is right. Our house is virtually underneath this tower. It's 31 metres tall. And our home would be virtually nearly underneath it. That's how close it's going to be to our fence.
Thank you.
I asked the other speaker if you had a preference to have one of those, to be near one of those towers. Is there one that you have a preference to live near? Or obviously, no one wants to live near any of them.
No, we don't.
Would one site be more not as bad to you as the other?
Well, we're in a residential block. I mean, there's not many commercial. It's not a commercial area. There's only the hotel there, and we've been there so long that hotel was a commercial site, a residential site. They changed to commercial to build the hotel, and now it's reverted back to residential. So it's all residential. It's not a commercial area at all.
Mayor Hannah, councillors and fellow members of the community, thank you for hearing from me again tonight. To refresh your memory, I'm a resident of Stanley Street and a joint party with the City of Marion in opposing Telstra's ERD court appeal regarding the Morford Road site. As such, I've been deeply involved in this matter for over 12 months and privy to the negotiations with Telstra in the ERD court. I just want to remind Council and everyone in attendance that the only reason we are here tonight because a process was undertaken to find the best location for this tower, which inevitably must exist in the area. The proceedings in the ERD court have always focused on finding the best location, as everyone involved in the matter realised that 142 Morfitt Road is a very poor solution. So to suggest this is about money or being conducted in an underhanded manner is missing the point. Looking for an alternative to 142 Morfitt Road has always been urged, encouraged and endorsed by a commissioner of the ERD court, recognising that with the need for this infrastructure, finding the most appropriate location is in everyone's best interests. Importantly, the commissioner also indicated that a failure to approve a suitable alternative to the Morfitt Road site, especially when one exists which is more appropriate by every objective measure, will affect the chances of stopping Telstra's pending ERD court appeal. Tonight's meeting is occurring because a year-long process has been undertaken when it was recognised Morfitt Road site is so blatantly inappropriate. A location at Kellett Reserve has been found which meets development assessment criteria. The Council's own strategic plan stipulates the City of Marion be well planned, and I don't know why the Council would risk a higher authority overriding the Council's own strategic direction. Kellett Reserve will provide community funding, which means people will benefit from a tower if it were to go at this location. I personally believe Kellett Reserve is the right decision, and by any available objective measure, including the most recent community consultation process, the facts support my opinion. I understand the Council is in an awkward position and probably better than anyone empathise with all residents involved, and I understand that whatever happens, there's going to be upset people. But the facts are that one site is significantly more appropriate than the other, and Council has the power to ensure the right decision was made. Thank you.
Question asked before, I think it was misunderstood when I asked Ms. Vaccaro, if you had a choice to live next to one site, what would be your preference?
With a tower at the site. Look, I think there's no doubt that whichever site it goes at, there's going to be negatives. I don't think anyone can pretend that's not going to be the case. If it was at the Oval, I believe it would be better screened, and I think the fact that the Development Assessment Panel, they're better educated at it than me, and that's what they've said as well. Thank you.
Appendix 3, I haven't seen Appendix 3.
hard copy would be fine, thank you. Well, I may not be alone. Yeah, 5 minutes of German, 10 minutes of German.
Yeah, so
Does that suggest that there is a cuts?
Yeah.
We shouldn't have suggested an alternative site. We should stay right out of it. Thank you.
All right, I think everyone's had a chance to look at that, and we're just on the 10-minute mark. So I'm looking for... do we need a motion, or is that happening automatically that we resume? It's happening automatically because 10 minutes is up. So we're now looking for a motion. Councillor Crossland.
Can I move motion, not the one that was originally on the screen, but an amended one that I've emailed through?
Does it relate to what's on the screen, or is it something totally different? It would just be useful to have it in writing. We do have it in writing, and that's the one on the screen now. We just need to be really clear that what you want to move is the one that we're seeing. And once we've got through that, is there something to scroll down to? Is there a confidentiality motion as well? Did you intend to include that in relation to legal advice? You're not moving that? Very well. Well, it's up to what... very well. I think everyone can see that. So, did you wish to speak? Well, first of all, I'll ask if the motion is seconded. Seconded Councillor Gard. Councillor Crossland, did you wish to speak to that?
Briefly, look, this has been a very difficult decision to make. Whatever we choose, unfortunately, there's going to be winners and losers. It's a no-win situation for our residents. The reason I'm putting this motion forward is I have looked at the survey. I have looked at the locations. I believe the Kellett Reserve has the least impact and also has the possibility down the track of maybe doing some additional landscaping. But the main reason is this decision was already made by our own development assessment panel when they refused the site at 142. This particular tower at Kellett Reserve meets our own development plan, and for that reason I believe we should support it. The financial element is a bit of a furphy, but it's been drawn into it with the club and the possible whether or not they are going to vote on the changes to the lease and things like that. At the end of the day, we own the site, we control the lease. We are the elected members. We should be making the decision. We shouldn't be trying to pitch residents against residents. So let's actually stand up and do what we're actually asked to do, make the decision. This is a core council business decision. So I'd ask elected members to actually vote on this and actually bring this to a conclusion rather than this ongoing uncertainty that we've had. So that's the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship. I concur with everything that Councillor Crossland has said. I do think this is one situation that can be really well dealt with and a negative turned into a positive. I have toured around the site. I've been going past the site very regularly, more than once a month for some 20 years, as my father lived in the next street, Dale Avenue. And I've always felt that Morphettville Oval has been very underdone in landscaping. And I believe that the values of homes in that area could be greatly increased with proper boundary trees through which you can look between trunks, which is the normal thing when you skirt an oval or a park with trees. You can look between the trees if you're a resident on the other side of the road from the park. But in this case, the canopies of the trees would, by angle, completely negate, or almost completely negate, any effects of the tower on the panorama. I believe that to be particularly the case on the north and south boundaries, where there are no trees to speak of at all, and it really looks terrible, in my view, as a councillor who's promoting streetscaping for the whole of Marion. And at the eastern boundary, there are gaps that could be filled adequately, and I actually feel that some of the trees that are on the eastern boundary could be thinned at the base so that the park becomes more obvious to those nearby. Whilst at the same time the canopies, the existing canopies of those trees, would cut out the line of sight to the tower. So I really feel that the area can be modified to the extent that property values should be increased. I do sympathise greatly on the other side of the coin with those on Morfitt Road, Stanley Street, Livingston and nearby streets that would be really knocked around by the alternative.
Most definitely, Mr. Mayor. Members would remember that I had concerns about this when this first came to us. I made it clear that I was uncomfortable with it, but it was a motion simply to go to community consultation. And I thought, well, if the Morfordville Park Sporting Club is correct, then why should I cast my own personal outlook on this? We should find out what people want. We did that, and we've ended up with the gallery full of people, and we've ended up with this. So why go through the consultation phase? Why would I vote to support a consultation motion, get all this back, and then ignore it? In terms of taking the money, I have concerns, ethical issues with that. Now, what I'm about to say might not help my deputy mayor's endeavours tonight, but who cares? My view on phone towers is long-standing. I oppose them all the time. Nothing's changed tonight. I don't want either of them. The money that is actually going into the legal costs possibly could be better spent on the lights for the sporting club. That's another argument again. But I think that we're in a fine mess. Somebody's got us into a fine mess. And really, we should be actually trying to get out of this mess by not playing one group of people off against the other, and that's exactly what's happening here tonight. I'm very uncomfortable with that. It's been a cruel process for those people due to somebody's endeavours. It's a cruel process. And we should not be involved. This is federal government legislation that's imposing this on our communities. Has anybody been to Matt Williams and asked what's going on? Why was the pin put in my backyard as to where this phone tower should go? I bet nobody's done that. But they'll come along to the council and expect us to stop it. And, you know, we've read the report. The odds of actually stopping it are not good. I hope that's not confidential. And there's a cost involved. We've done the right thing. We've opposed it, gone to the EAD court. Commissioner's made all sorts of statements about where he thinks it should go. But at the end of the day, we should not have phone tower dependence on money income for this council to actually provide community amenity. We should not have that sort of dependence. And it sets up a terrible example of where we might be going into the future. What integrity would we have down the track when there's a phone tower proposed at Glandore, when we've actually got this sort of chunky little deal going on the side because it's council land and we can't? And bugger the people.
Look, my first choice is not to have a tower anywhere. It's a smack bang in the middle of the ward. I've seen how upset people have been on both sides. I know Matt Williams has been contacted by one of the residents. This was before for the DAP thing. I recall they didn't feel it was helpful. If Matt Williams rushed in legislation tonight and it got passed, it would not affect this decision, sadly. The reason it's been brought here is if council decides either way whether one outcome overall is worse than the other. The club approached me a while ago, before, I think it was a couple of years ago actually, because they needed their facilities. They were overlooked in the term previously. I wasn't the liaison person there, and they weren't prioritised. So basically, that's why they weren't on that radar. They gave a deputation here in the previous council, and the case management situation was started. What we vote either way is going to end up with a site. That's the reality. I wish it was simple enough to say we don't want any towers, Telstra pack up. They're not going to. And the other thing I guess is though that we need to be consistent. And I think most of us here, probably that were here previously, supported the Hallett Cove Library. We spent $13 million. To build a library that we see a phone tower as we walk out the door. There's concerns about the club, obviously, that they've got obviously some issues within the club that go beyond this issue, and I hope that they're able to resolve those in a productive way, regardless of the decision tonight. But I think, you know, as I said, like if I had the choice, if there was no tower. But that's not the choice we've got. We've got to decide if there's a way within our power to affect the location. And there's going to be people not happy there either way. And that's why we, sadly, you know, that's part of the being in a position to represent people. It's not always easy. It's not always going to get support in the community. And either way, whatever happens tonight, we will determine an outcome.
Any other speakers? I invite Councillor Crossland, if he wishes, to respond.
I'd just like to acknowledge some of the things that Councillor Hall said, but notwithstanding those issues, let's put some of those thoughts aside. Let's look at the facts, look at what's detailed in the survey. Let's consider the fact that tonight there is going to be a tower going in one of those two locations, and just look at and also consider the development plan, which at some stage you've been party to signing up to. We either support Marion Council's development plan or we don't, and that's again a decision you're making here tonight.
Very well, I put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. I declare the motion carried. And we'll proceed to the next item of business. I'll just say, while I invite Mr. Pinnegar to come up to the front, I just want to say, residents, it's been a difficult night. The vote was 5-3. I counted 5-3. But the decision's been made. I haven't formally moved. No, well, it must be called immediately after the vote, and we'd moved on from that. So I decline to go to a division. We're ready to move to the next item of business. Those who wish to leave the meeting, you're welcome to. If you wish to stay, you're also welcome to. We're just waiting for Councillors Appleby and Westwood to rejoin the meeting. Now, members, we're dealing with the Local Government Association membership, membership fees, the title says, but it's a question of membership has come up. Members are aware there's been this volume of correspondence, a bit of a tussle to and fro. That's there in the report. I'm very pleased to say that Mr. Pinnegar, the Chief Executive of the LGA, has come along to address us this evening. I've invited him to speak for 5 minutes about the changes he wishes to effect in the LGA organisation, and then to take a liberal approach to questions, so that a lot of the information members are after can come out through the questions. So with that, I invite Mr. Pinnegar to address us. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship, and thanks for the opportunity to you and your elected members and council for inviting me here this evening. You may be aware that I've been the CEO of the LGA. I'm in my sixth week at the moment. I got married 2 weeks in as well, and I had a Monday off, which was terrific. I understand I'm up with a lot of the issues and concerns that have been expressed by council about the LGA. I understand the history where there were some issues with subscription fees being overcharged. So I just wanted to really talk about my role and what I see happening with the LGA with the support of the board, which is elected by your peers, as we try to reset and refocus the association on the task at hand. So as I said, I've been here for 6 weeks, and in those 6 weeks, there are quite a few things have happened. We've had the ongoing concerns from Marion Council around around membership. We've had an Auditor General's report, which has suggested that we could improve our contract management, and we've had some ongoing issues with the local government procurement, where it's been determined to take that back into the LGA in another or maybe even a final attempt to make that work. There is certainly an appetite for change and reform within the executive, the board, and I think the sector in general. I made it very clear during the interview process that my interest in the job was there if the board felt that they wanted to reform the association and that they felt that the sector was ready to embrace change. And my view is that it's not about change for change's sake. I mean, there needs to be a business case behind any change. But I think the role of any good CEO is to examine the organisation that they've been tasked to run and look for efficiencies and look for waste management so that that can be eliminated from the organisation. I also firmly believe that it is an organisation that represents its members. It has a board which is made up of elected members which are voted for by members. It has an executive of the same, and there are other various groups such as regional local government associations, metropolitan local government group, and a regional group as well. So I think that members having a discussion about what services should be provided by their association is a legitimate discussion to have. There are many opportunities for member councils to have those discussions. My phone is always on, as is the President's, and I encourage councillors and members to give us a call if there's something that they don't like. Where I see the organisation going is that I want to make it more relevant for its members, I want to make it more representative of its members, and I'm hoping that together we can get the organisation to a point where we're also respected by the state government, and not just as an association but as a sector. And when I say respected, that means that we won't have situations where ministers are expressing their distaste for our sector in the media on a daily basis or even in meetings with us regarding our ability to administer planning legislation. We won't have a situation where upper house independents think that it's okay to move motions or amendments to the Local Government Act so that your administration will have to disclose your council, your credit card fees on a website, something that hasn't even been discussed with the LGA. Ultimately, I see a role for the LGA in defending and advocating for our sector, but also in reforming our sector. There are many issues going on with financial sustainability, and I think that there is an appetite for the first time for us to reform our sector in concert with a respectful state government. There are many issues that South Australia is facing, and the state government has asked us to assist them, particularly with economic activity, economic development, but yet at the same time doesn't see our sector as being one that is mature enough to be able to administer a planning system. So look, there are many things to do, and I think the board has put it on the line with a governance review, a membership review of subscriptions, and a structural review, and we also have an annual plan which we're looking to complete by the end of January. I would really like Marion to come on that journey with us. I think that we can deliver value for money to our members, and I think that there are many opportunities for you to have a say in how we reorganise and reposition your association for the future so that we can be effective for member councils and ultimately for South Australians.
Thank you, Mr. Pinniger, for taking the time to come and see us. One of the things that was unclear to us, although I didn't take the position, I can firmly understand why my colleagues were concerned and ended up with a membership suspension. It wasn't made clear to us exactly what benefits we get because we're in local government, what benefits we get because specifically we're part of the LGA, and perhaps those grey areas that you don't know identifying, so look, you know, we don't know. So that I think built up some distrust, because it looked like that things that we got or we thought we got anyway were just taking credit. And I guess from that wasn't helpful, and people saw some examples of which they thought probably weren't priorities. But what sort of things do you think you could reduce in the organisation? What are the potential waste areas, and what sort of changes do you think you could be enacted in the organisation, and maybe a little bit of a what you think might be the possible time frames for those, if you can.
Yeah, thanks, Councillor Valesky, for your questions. And they're very good ones indeed. There are a lot of benefits that the LGA has had to contemplate before as being separate or part of a membership fee. And I think that the schemes are a good example of that. The schemes, your insurance schemes, were set up some decades ago when councils were paying something like 13% of their staff wages in WorkCover commissions. Then it was determined that we could do it better, so the LGA worked with the state government and Jardines to come up with the system which we have now, which has been demonstrably better and cheaper than the state government's WorkCover system. So that's an example of where a united sector working through an association has delivered something which has been of a huge benefit for decades. Mutual liability scheme is another one that was set up because of the Stirling bushfires, where a council's liability only extended to $2 million and the state was left with a debt, I think, of some $18 million. The state said that they didn't want to be in a situation again where councils didn't have full insurance, and then the association worked again with the scheme manager, Jardines, and the state government to provide an unlimited guarantee for council members. But the question of what you get for your money in terms of the scheme, the LGA certainly hasn't contemplated it being you pay your membership fee and then you get X, Y and Z. Maybe that's because they've been a bit naive. Maybe it's because we haven't had a council challenge membership fees before in this way. My view is that it's a coercive route is not one that I would feel comfortable with. I would prefer that councils are members of the association because they see a benefit in it. I do believe that the schemes are a benefit that comes from being a member of a collective, and that collective is the local government association. And my understanding is that the other 67 councils at this stage are happy to stay members and give me a chance to reform the organisation. My view is that it's had a CE for a very long time, and I'm not going to critique that CE or the association that I've been handed, but suffice to say, it is my role to put the association on a continuous improvement path, which I intend to do. I won't identify elements of waste at this meeting, but suffice to say it's an ongoing task of any CEO to look for efficiencies in the organisation that they manage. My undertaking to you and to all members is that I will look for value for money for your membership and hopefully be the CEO of an association that will make you proud.
Key point that
Yes, Your Worship, I'm very happy with that.
Thank you, Your Worship. This question's been previously asked by the Mayor in his letter dated 6th of October 2015, but I can't seem to find an answer in the correspondence. Is the LGA Board considering excluding the City of Marion from its insurance schemes?
That issue hasn't been contemplated by the LGA Board, or hasn't been directed. There hasn't been a direction from the LGA Board to that effect. I sit on the scheme boards as a representative of the local government association, and I understand, or I know, that you've paid your subscription fees for this financial year. So it would be a scheme board decision as to whether or not they determined that you wouldn't receive the benefits for this financial year. But I'm of the view that you would receive the benefits because you've paid the fees. That's correct. So my understanding is that council has paid its subscriptions, if you like, for its insurance for the year, for this financial year. You have, Your Worship, you have paid those fees.
Just to follow up on that question, would council be prevented from being in those schemes if it wasn't a member in the future?
Yeah, and that's where we're touching on, you know, what happens when councils are electing not to be members of an association that's administering schemes on behalf of what's been a united sector. So if Marion choose to leave the LGA, then the board would need to consider what it needs to do to tighten up eligibility for things that they would consider to be benefits from being a member of a collective and of the local government association, which I think would be unfortunate to some extent because we've been in a situation where councils have been willing members for so long.
And can I just again clarify, when you say the board would need to look at tightening up, you're talking about the LGA board, not the scheme board? I mean, I see those entities as totally different, notwithstanding the fact that LGA has appointments on the scheme boards. So can you clarify, when you're just talking about the board tightening up, if somebody left, you're talking about the LGA?
Your Worship. I think the LGA, I can't speak for the board, and it would be a decision that the board would need to make. But to some extent, Marion is questioning whether they can receive benefits from what I see as being part of a collective, part of the association that represents them, or not. If councils elect to leave the LGA, then it would certainly be a consideration of the board about how to tighten up what the benefits are for being a member of the LGA. To some extent, I think the other 67 councils that have chosen to stay in the LGA would also be looking for that clarification.
Well, if I could follow up with a question just on that same point. Are you suggesting, Mr. Pinnegar, that the LGA board has any power whatsoever to limit the benefits received by a non-LGA member council from the workers' compensation scheme, for example?
So the LGA has nominees on the scheme boards. Look, I can't answer that question definitively, Your Worship. It would ultimately be a decision for the LGA board about what they would do should Marion decide that they no longer wish to be a member of the LGA. So I really can't speak for them. Whether as those powers exist, my reading of the scheme rules are that they are, but I mean, I guess we would need to leave that to the experts.
Well, I consider that I am one, but never mind. Councillor Telfer.
Through the chair, Mr. Pinnegar. We raised this whole issue as a council with our concern about the level of subscriptions, particularly when larger councils had lower subscriptions than we did. And we go on to consider that, and I know you're about to review this, but I guess we remain concerned at that level of subscription given the new fiscal climate with the state government and also the formulae, which has come out as reasonably arbitrary. We don't mind averaging subscriptions for those country small councils. We have trouble with the 3x cap. It could be a 4x cap. I guess, would like some assurance that there's some attempt to look at the whole overall budget of the LGA from its 2.117 million a year. Are there opportunities to get it lower towards 2 million?
Yeah, thanks for your question. So, yeah, there is a membership subscription review that is happening now. I suspect that it will come up with different formulas that may be construed as fairer by councils that are in your situation. I don't want to preempt any decisions that are made from that review, and there will be a consultation component as we progress that before the next financial year. In terms of the quantum of the LGA's budget, that is a matter that's dealt with by the LGA board, which is elected by councils such as Marion. And as I've said, I think it's a legitimate discussion to have about the services that are provided by your association and at what cost. So my view is that the best mechanism for that is through your board, which ultimately needs to ratify a budget for the next financial year.
Yes, Mr. Penegura, I would like to ask you whether you can empathise with us that the sorry history of this flare-up of concern by Marion started with an innocent tweet with a councillor elsewhere about how much his council charged. And we found out that we were paying a lot more than that large council. So we asked some questions, and then anyway, after a protracted affair, we find out that we were being overcharged for 9 years. And during that period of time, we had our mayor as the president of that association, who went on to become president of the ALGA, and when the actual issue came to a head, our ex-CEO was actually in your seat. And then we actually, it was like pulling teeth to get answers. Yeah, I've asked the question already. I prefaced it with my question. Can you empathise with the City of Marion as to why we're in this position? And now we find out that on top of the $100,000 a year, we're paying also for any procurement we do for the LGA. We're paying for the mutual liability scheme. We're paying and we're paying and we're paying. So can you actually see why we would be reasonably concerned about the cost to our ratepayers, who are actually demanding from us more and more to keep our rates low, although the LGA seems to be advocating quite the opposite in terms of rates?
Thanks, Councillor Hull. I certainly can empathise with your position. I'm sorry, I can say that as a new CEO, that I'm sorry that there's situations arisen where this council was being overcharged. I understand that that's been repaid with interest, and there is a subscription review that's underway. I am sorry that happened, and yes, I do empathise with the fiscal environment that we're in. My view is that the avenue to express those concerns and address them in a positive light would be through the LGA board, which is made up of elected members.
Mr. Penegar, through the chair, I'm interested to just through your eyes understand whether you see that there will be increasing value as time goes on to your members, and also I wanted to make the point that There has been, I think it's almost official, a coming together of several councils to comprise a Western Alliance for funding purposes. I don't believe anyone on our council heard about that, and I'm not sure whether the LGA was privy to the manoeuvres that would have preceded that. However, it brings to light something that I've been advocating for since I've sat in this chair, and that is that there be more rationalisation in local government to provide a better value level of government on the one hand, and better government than the other two levels on the other hand. So my question is, well, I have asked one with due respect, Your Worship, and that is what your plans are, or what you see as increasing value for us, because we've heard a lot about existing value. And secondly, is the LGA privy to any formation of alliances, or does it endorse some?
Yeah, thanks, Councillor Gard. I mean, I smiled while you were talking because I got excited by what you were talking about. There are many things that are occurring within local government sector at the moment around shared services, maybe shared procurement. There are four regionalisation pilots that are occurring at the moment. We've got the Minister's planning reforms, which aren't all bad. They do contemplate regionalisation. We're having ongoing discussions with the local Office of Local Government about more flexibility in regions being able to set up subsidiaries or legal entities or arrangements to suit their region. So many of these discussions are happening right now, and they're very exciting. And if we can progress those, and I think that they certainly should be a priority for the LGA to show leadership in those areas and include council members that. That want to be involved in these things, but certainly some very exciting opportunities arising at this time, and ones that I would like to pursue on behalf of our membership. So I certainly would be concerned if in future council members were concerned about the value proposition of our association. I think we need to do better as part of continuous improvement. We need to do better in communicating what we are doing to our members. We need to consult with them better so that our priorities are your priorities. So the undertakings that I will make to the council is that I do think things will be better. If they're not, I'm pretty sure I'll get shown the door. No, the regionalisation pilot projects are actually happening with some of our regional local government associations at the moment. The Eyre Peninsula has actually set up their own pilot project, for want of a better word. We're aware of other groups such as ERA. There's the Western one that you've discussed. I think these are all really exciting opportunities for local government to get better, be more efficient, save money for ratepayers, and demonstrate that to the state government that we can govern ourselves.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you, and thank you for coming along tonight, Mr. Kangara. I really appreciate it. Two questions. Firstly, what is the timetable for the subscription review? Second question, in your opinion, is it going to be possible to see the ship start to turn over the course of this coming or this current financial year, so the next 8 months, in terms of that value proposition?
Thanks for the questions. In terms of the first one, I would like to see, the timetable is for the review to be conducted immediately and for that to be consulted upon in time for subscriptions to go out for the next financial year. In terms of the second question, I've completely forgotten what it was, if you can prompt me. Oh, yes. Yeah. I certainly hope so, and I think that my view is fair to, I'd like you to give me 12 months. And again, I'd like to emphasise I'm not working alone. I'll be working with a very committed executive and LGA board who are very keen to improve the LGA as I am. So, but I certainly would expect that, you know, we can point to some changes for the better by the end of this financial year. But personally, I'd like 12 months to be able to conduct a thorough review of the association.
Thank you. Through the chair, thank you. I support really the views of Councillor Gard. I think the communication from the LGA since I've been a newly elected member hasn't really advertised any benefits from the LGA sufficiently. I have found benefits through my own research. I would like to see the LGA not only being a voice for councils, legislation, things like that, but also being at the forefront of looking at ways to save all councils' money. And that was again echoed by Councillor Gard with the shared services, similar to the Library One card, which I believe was brainchild of the LGA. So I suppose my question is, are you up for a challenge? One of the options here tonight, I know you've mentioned 12 months, but one of the options tonight is to review our membership of the LGA on the April 2016 and see if the LGA has turned. Are we getting better communication? And are there strategies in the pipeline which are exciting and appeal to councils such as ours, where we can see some possible change for the benefit?
Look, I undertake to you that I'm happy to come back to council in March or April next year and discuss the changes that are in effect at the association to assist council to make a decision for the following financial year, while also communicating with you better to find out what your thoughts are and also get you involved as members of the association and some of the exciting things that we're doing.
I'll move option one.
Yep.
The reason I'm supporting this option, I guess first of all, we've got to pay our fees for the year anyway. But I think that I appreciate the fact that the LGA has come to us with what appears to be sincerity. They have outlined what they plan to do, the vision that the new CEO has. And also they have recognised, which I felt was with sincerity, that there is need for improvement. I think perhaps our previous interactions haven't had that same sincerity. And I felt a level of humility as well, which I don't think we had before. And I think that is important in leadership, and important in the leadership of the organisation responsible for representing us, leaders in local government. So I do look forward to the opportunity in July, April or March, to see what the LGA is planning. I was concerned that this issue was potentially escalating. It gets in a situation where people perhaps have a position they believe in, and I didn't want us to feel... I didn't want us to be consumed. And the message of what we are doing for our community as a team and as a united team is lost on the LGA issues, whether we're members or not. I was approached by someone sort of senior and influential, and the first thing they said was, "Oh, what's going on with the LGA?" I thought, well, this isn't what we want. We want you to acknowledge everything else that we're doing, but this has become all-consuming. So I really appreciate the fact that there has been a circuit breaker, and I hope that we can resume the candor in our conversation and the respectfulness that I felt was shown tonight. So that's why I ask that we get back to doing what we're doing and await some changes in April next year. Thank you.
Point three, reassess its position. Now, are we talking about the LGA here or are we talking about us? But I'd like that
the position, as I understand it in the context, refers to continuing membership of the LGA.
Yeah, well, nowhere does it say council. It just says reassess. Oh, that council. Okay, fair enough. Mr. Mayor, question, in terms of when the bill has to be paid, that's on the 30th of June at midnight, is that correct?
Well, I believe it's probably due for payment.
No, not the current one, the one in 2016.
For the ensuing year, one would expect it to arrive before 30th of June, but I understand that historically hasn't always been the case.
So what I'm getting at is, will we have adequate time to reassess our position before an account arrives on the doorstep and is sent off? Like, it raised concern with me tonight, Mr. Mayor, that our account with the mutual liability scheme and the other one had been paid. That's a...
Councillor Hull, just
I was naive enough to think that the $100,000 picked up all of that, but that's just me.
I suppose that's a matter for education, but if you look into the subject matter, the discussion about fees has always been for LGA membership, and there are various add-ons. One of the councillors alluded to that. The workers' compensation scheme, the mutual liability insurance scheme, for example, they are paid premiums like any insurer, and they pay out when there's a claim, and if they have excess money, they return some of it and keep a lot of it. But that is, they are separate entities from the LGA, quite clearly. So just to, I answer you just as a point of clarification. So does that help with your question?
It does, but maybe the CEO could indicate that April is a reasonable time for us to consider the review of our position.
Well, you know, that was a question when Mr. Pinnegar was here.
It's a timing question, that's all it is.
But just, if I can just help with some clarification then. In April 2016, I mean, this motion says that we'll virtually pay our LGA membership fee shortly. They will be doing their work, as Mr. Pinnegar has suggested, of reform. In April, we would review that. At that point, we wouldn't have received our invoice for the 2016-17 financial year. We won't actually even have the invoice. It'll arrive sometime after that in 2016. But the point is that no matter what the quantum of that invoice might be, we would be re-evaluating the progress with reform. I think that's the intention that is being set out there in light of the discussions.
Well, come... at time, if the situation didn't look favourable, the council would get the appropriate advice about alternative insurance, such as the insurance company that did approach us some months ago to make inroads into local government, so we can actually go ahead in an informed way. I thought that the past situation with the LGA and the administration's advice, what did not place us in a position to be able to make a decision with any conviction?
Thank you, Councillor Hull. It may be a simple answer, but Mr. Scull, what do you say about adequately informing Council of alternatives when we come to reassess the scenario in April next year?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I would suggest that the decision on to go out to spend all the resource that would be required to get the information necessary to make a decision should the council elect to withdraw should be made after the council has heard from Mr. Pinniger and the progress he's making against his reform agenda. I'm not sure whether Councillor Hull is asking that before April that we find out if there are alternatives before we've actually heard the progress against the agenda or not. But my feeling about this would be that we would actually wait until April, March, April, when Mr. Pinniger comes to talk about progress and where they're heading. And then if Council decided that there wasn't sufficient faith in the LGA's reform agenda that we would actually withdraw, then that's when I would be charged with going out to find out, are there alternatives? What are the risks in actually pulling out of the LGA and getting all the data? I hope that answers the question.
Just a preparatory comment from the CEO that he would be mindful of that. That's the sort of information we would need. That's all I need to know.
Yeah, certainly.
Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Worship. I think we need to keep our options open. So I'd like to amend the motion by adding a point four. Authorise the Mayor to have discussions with other councils about setting up an alternative association.
Thank you for providing it in writing. That's good practice. Is that amendment seconded? Councillor Gard? Councillor Appleby, did you wish to speak to the amendment further? Councillor Gard, did you wish to speak to the amendment or the motion?
Yes, Your Worship. I have only just had that option put to me by Councillor Appleby, but on reflection, I'm taking this Western Alliance situation very, very seriously. I regard it as amazing that our neighbours Holdfast Bay, with a 10-kilometre border with us and a 2-kilometre or 3-kilometre border with West Torrens, have not informed us of the option that they're taking up. There seem to be two, if the spine is West Torrens, west of Adelaide, there are two other councils north of Adelaide in that alliance, and there's Holdfast Bay and no others south. And I am just amazed at that trend. So I think we need to keep our options open strategically. I really do hope we can embrace Mr. Pinniger's words with confidence, and I sense we can. However, I feel keeping options open at this point is the right strategic thing to do. And I really feel we do need to do some research, and we have to get our neighbours talking to us.
Is there anyone else speaking to the amendment before I put the amendment? Preferably. If not, then I'll put the amendment. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? I find that the vote is tied, and I must therefore consider a casting vote. To keep options open, I will cast my vote in favour of the affirmative, so the amendment is carried. We now continue the debate in respect of the motion as amended, if there are any further speakers. Are there any further speakers? Councillor Pfeiffer.
So I can now speak against the motion as the motion. Is that correct?
Yes, that's fine.
Sure, thank you. Look, I was very, very much in favour of the first 3 points, but the fourth was a bit of a sticking point for me. Look, I think it, realistically, when you look at point three, which is to reassess our position in April 2016, the point four really kind of circumvents that, and it almost says that, you know, we'll keep charging ahead regardless and we'll do what we want to do. It's not really giving the LGA the opportunity to do the work that Mr. Pinnegar came here in good faith and spoke to us about tonight. It's by saying that, you know, that we will commence discussions about setting up an alternative, which I don't know whether would be possible under the current Act anyway. I think we need to actually give the LGA the opportunity under a new CEO to do what has been spelled out to us tonight.
I just want to clarify that I did not rule that it was inconsistent with the rest of the motion, because it's authorising, in other words, setting up a possibility rather than definitely instructing the Mayor to complete something by a certain time, etc. So it leaves open an option, and on that basis I felt it was consistent with the motion. But as to the merits of it, well, I'm happy to hear debate. Councillor Hull.
I'm going to speak in favour of the motion, or point one through to four. Mr. Mee, you're quite right. It's actually only saying to have discussions, and it's not saying to actually do it. But what this does is puts the LGA on notice that not only do we have expectations of them, but we're actually going to actually look forward to ensuring that we are represented appropriately, and there may be another forum for that to happen. May. Now, it may be that no other council might be interested, but it is only a discussion, and it's discussion is healthy. I think it's healthy in more ways than one. And, look, I just find it unbelievable in South Australia, where we have 1.3 million people in the major population in Adelaide. There's a very small population outside of Adelaide. And, you know, we've got a similar population to the city of Newcastle. Now, it doesn't have its own LGA. So, you know, I'm just putting things in perspective. And I do wonder why we need 40 or 50 staff at the LGA to look after such a small population. It's a big state, I must admit. But population-wise, you do have to wonder. It's so convenient for us to make contact with our local MPs. They're all on tap. They're all here. If we really want to see them, we can have audience with them quite readily. And really, I think not only are we testing the LGA's cost, but we're testing the LGA in toto. And they need to lift their game in many ways. And I'm quite happy for Mr. Pinnegar to hear me saying this. Councillor Gard, I know how far he would go. He would go to amalgamations, and I support him on that. But the LGA will speak against that, because they will be threatened by having less councils, and I find that an ethical issue in itself. But anyway, let's not digress. I'm happy for point four to be in this motion. I'm happy for the motion. I'm happy to give the LGA a chance, but I'm also happy to see the LGA have a real hard look at themselves.
Councillor Crossland seconded the motion.
I didn't speak, but Councillor Hall did speak.
Councillor Hall was asking questions.
Or can I ask a question? Can I ask a question of Mr. Pinnegar?
It better be a question.
Can I ask a question of Mr. Pinnegar? Is he still in the room?
No, I don't think that's appropriate. We're in the debate now. You can ask a question of the Chair, if you like, and the LGA may wish to reply later.
No, that's fine.
Right, because we do want to get on with it. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Telfer?
I speak against the line number four, because I think it just scatters our focus and direction, and we again become, in the community, unsure what we're on about.
Any other speakers?
Councillor Valescu has a question.
This motion is lost because of concerns about the last bit. What would happen after that?
There are two possibilities. One would be I would invite someone to move another motion, but I'd be mindful of the result on this motion, so we couldn't have something inconsistent with this motion, complex as it may be. The alternative would be no motion at all, and then things would pretty well just stay as they are.
Would the first motion be inconsistent with this motion?
Do you mean the motion you moved?
Yes.
Yes, because it would be inconsistent with the vote on the amendment. Yes, go ahead. Councillor Walesker.
The last bit doesn't specify a time. So could the time frame be afterwards?
Well, Councillor...
After the April discussion?
It is possible to move second amendment, but I would also say that your Mayor is always mindful of the sensitivities and wishes of elected members in relation to these matters. So I'm not going to be sending out an email tomorrow calling on a boycott of the LGA or something like that. That matter would be handled sensitively, and I'll take your point into account, but as things stand, there is no reference as to time frame.
Just to allay some of the fears of some of the other members, I believe that the motion is fairly specific about giving the LGA a chance to show reform, and I think that the Mayor's actions in discussing with other councils before that chance has been given would be viewed very unfavourably. So, among the councillors, not to mention everybody else. So I'm happy to leave point four in there, as I do believe it gives us options, and I think the Mayor would not abuse the power he's been given.
Can I move an amendment to that amended motion?
You can't, because you've spoken, I'm afraid. And I think just about almost everybody has. Are there any other speakers? Being no more, I put the... there's a right of reply. And who... And
look,
it was a long time ago, but Councillor Valescu?
Yeah.
In reply?
I believe by the CEO from the LGA coming here, he's put out the olive branch on behalf of the organisation. I sense his sincerity, and I was very comfortable with the first three points. I was not comfortable with a four-point. I can understand that as an option, but I think we probably personally felt we should have shown a little bit more grace and just held back. But based on the assessment that the Mayor has said, how he's reading it and how he's indicated he doesn't want to have too many concerns amongst the elected members, and I'm assuming broader, I'm willing to support it, but it would be under the understanding that those discussions would be inappropriate before we hear back from the LGA in regards to what they do. We can't move an amendment. I don't know if we can do a foreshadowed motion to put it before after April. Would that be an issue? If this
you're seeking a clarification. The clarification is that members need to respect the democratic outcome. We just had a vote, which, with a casting vote, was 6-5.
Okay.
Council wants to authorise the Mayor to have such discussions. Yep. It doesn't mean they will happen, but they may happen.
Yep.
They may happen incidentally. They may happen by design. They're not likely to happen without consultation between the Mayor and elected members, but there's no guarantee they won't happen before April either.
Okay.
We just have to accept... That's a package. You either vote for that package or you don't vote for that package. But you may wish to continue your remarks, Councillor.
It's not going to be the first vest of a bad bad situation I'm going to support tonight, as far as just because of that last thing. But I guess for me, I'm putting it out there that this is about working with the LGA until we're given further reason to think otherwise. And that's why, and not having an outcome at the end of this would just drag it out. So whilst I'm not comfortable with the last thing, I think it personally wasn't necessary. I will support the amended motion as a, because we need to move forward. We've got other things to focus on. Let the LGA focus on the vision that they've articulated tonight.
Thank you, Councillor. I put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried by a majority.
Division.
Division called. All those in favour, please stand in your place. Councillor Telfer, Councillor Pryor, Councillor Hull, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Valescu, Councillor Appleby, Councillor Gard. You may sit down. Those against are Councillor Pfeiffer, Councillor Hutchinson, Councillor Crossland. So, thank you, members, and thank you, Mr. Pinnegar, again, in the gallery there. We move on.